The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning Glory America, I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'm not there. I'm chasing Genghis Cain. She's chasing me. Or one of the other three small. Whatever it is, I'm not there this week. I'm on the other side of the country. And I'm turning the controls over for a week of solo flying to none other than Generalissimo. That's right. Dwayne's going to fly the plane all week long. Into the ground, into the air. I don't know. I do care. And I'll be listening, as I hope you do. Take it away, Dwayne.
Thank you, Hugh. Good morning, America. Dwayne Patterson filling in for Hugh this week. Day one of the unthinkable. 5 days of me guest hosting the program for Hugh. Glad to have you on board. We have lots to do ahead today. I have a ton of material to bring to you in our 3 hours together. A little bit later on, after the show's even over with, we will have a podcast within the universe. Universe.com, where the grand old pod resides. I will be subbing in for Hugh on that as well, bringing all things GOP presidential primary. That's coming up a little bit later on as well. But it's time for the rundown, so let's get to the news, shall we? New York Times piece today by Mark Santora. This is what trench warfare on the front line is like. It is getting pretty grisly in the standoff between Ukraine and Russia, especially around the areas of Russia that there's just no movement. The Ukrainians have been kind of surrounded a little bit by Russia, except that over the weekend, where there was going to be a collapse, apparently the Ukrainians decided to dig in and fought back a little bit, and now it looks like there is a little movement the other direction. The Russian forces were so close that Bogdan, a Ukrainian soldier with the 79th Air Assault Brigade, Mark Santora writes, could see them digging. Digging is what to do in this forlorn stretch of scorched earth in eastern Ukraine to avoid dying. Bogdan wants the Russians to die, so he lifted a shoulder-fired rocket-propelled grenade launcher, peered over the sandbags mounted on the edge of his trench, and blasted away. The digging stopped. Moments later, Russian soldiers let loose a volley of automatic gunfire. Then things went silent. None of us were around. Our parents were around. In many cases, our grandparents weren't even around when it came to stories of what World War One was like. We've seen some movies over the years as to try to depict what World War One was like with trench warfare. This is probably as close as anything we've seen or resembled in the last 100 years, and it's pretty grisly. In Selma, Alabama, the president went on a field trip and gave a speech yesterday on the 58th anniversary of Bloody Sunday in Selma. And Joe Biden, as Joe Biden is wont to do, it was there in search for a problem that doesn't exist. He decided to say we need to work harder on voting rights because there's too much blocking of voting going on out there. Now, Alabama is right next door, or the same general vicinity as Georgia is, and he tried this bit about how, you know, we're not having enough voting going on in Georgia, except that Georgia passed a law that led to record turnout of voting in the last election. And so that message doesn't work in Georgia anymore. So the president went to Alabama and basically tried the same message there. It's kind of a crazy message that the president is offering, but now he is threatening to blow up the filibuster in order to expand voting rights. And this really wasn't on your bingo card last week, was it? We'll have some audio from that speech in a little bit. Utah wants to disable a law that led to the creation of 4 of its magnificent national parks. John Leshy writes in the New York Times, Utah basically got tired of the federal government seizing land and federalizing it, and they want some of their land back. And so they're starting to use legal maneuvers and other legislative maneuvers to try to wrestle control of a lot of land that the federal government has taken over. And if you don't think that's a thing out in the Mountain West, and especially in other states west of the Mississippi, ask C.J. Boxset, novelist extraordinaire. He talks a lot about that in Wyoming and in Montana in a couple of different series of books, how mission creep from the federal government has taken over so much land and federalized it that states are starting to look for ways to push back and reclaim some of their lost land. Tim Craig writing in the Washington Post today, a mile-long line for free food offers a warning as COVID benefits end. This story is filed from Hazel Green, Kentucky. As he claimed the first spot in a mile-long line for free food in the Appalachian foothills, Danny Blair vividly recalled receiving the letter announcing that his pandemic-era benefit to help buy groceries was about to be slashed. Kentucky lawmakers had voted to end the state's health emergency last spring by default cutting food stamp benefits created to help vulnerable Americans like Blair weather the worst of COVID-19. Instead of $200 a month, it's going to get dropped down to $30 a month. Now, a lot to say about this, but primarily, you recall when Joe Biden angrily pounded the lectern and shook his fist and screamed at a camera how un-American it was that people were in food lines during COVID in the era of Trump, as people were in food lines in the era of Biden. And he didn't want to mention that very much. Do you recall that Joe Biden keeps claiming that he has cut the deficit? Sometimes he claims he's cut the debt itself by $1.7 trillion. None of that's true, of course. He hasn't cut anything. If you want to talk about the reduction in the rate of increase of the deficit, it's got nothing to do with Joe Biden. What it has to do is with Congress, when they put in all these pandemic-era relief bills, they put sunset clauses on them because they knew we can't just wallpaper the country with cash we don't have forever. So they put sunset provisions on them. And when those sunset provisions went on, we have $2 trillion deficits dropping down to $0.75 trillion deficits. And Joe Biden's saying, see, I get credit for that. No, you don't. You didn't do anything about it. In fact, what you've done is you jam through another couple of spending measures that guarantees that that deficit that came down because of Congress sunset provisions, it's going to go right back up to $2 trillion. And in addition to that, you still have mile-long lines for food in cases. Doesn't speak well of the president's performance there. We'll have video a little bit later on in other facets of the president's performance and what it is leading to, primarily in some of the nominees. I've got a great piece of video ahead about the FAA nominee, a guy named Phil Washington, who got in front of the Senate committee, his confirmation hearing, and he doesn't apparently know the first thing about flying. Ted Budd, brand new senator from North Carolina, grilled him, asked him a bunch of questions, and he had no earthly idea what he was talking about. This is the caliber of candidates. We've seen it with a lot of judges as well, but this is the caliber of candidates that Joe Biden is offering. Lots ahead on that front. And what is leading to, by the way, is there is a lot of unease within the Democratic Party, and media is kind of reporting it and kind of not. In the way they're kind of reporting it is, well, you know, there's an SOS plan out there. There's an emergency backup if Joe Biden can't go or really isn't a practical candidate because of his age. And so who are they're looking around. So who's it going to be? Is it going to be Kamala Harris? Why? No, it's not going to be Kamala Harris because nobody likes her and she's really not very good. Well, what about Pete Buttigieg? He's the next guy. Well, no, he's really not, because when you need him, he's AWOL. We've seen that on display with crises after crises. Most recently, the East Palestine train disaster, where he was a no-show for 2 weeks. So who's it going to be? Why, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. That's what the New York Times says. He's the fallback plan, at least for now. We'll get to that in a little bit, and what he had to say, and how media is responding to that. Lots ahead today. More news. It's Duane Patterson filling in for Hugh Hewitt today.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
51 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, America. Duane Patterson filling in for Hugh. All of this week, I get to do my normal thing, but I also get to talk to the regulars. And what's fun about it is I get to talk to them on air when I normally get to talk to them for just a couple of minutes off air. Like this one of my buddies. I mean, this is America's sweetheart, a columnist extraordinaire for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the Washington Examiner, the New York Post. You can read all things Selena at selenazito.com. You can even see some tweets occasionally at Zito Selena. Good morning, Selena. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Duane. How are you?
I'm doing spectacular. I'm going to get out of the way and clear the runway, and I want you to kind of let us know about this Post-Gazette piece you did, because it links South Fayette Township Volunteer Fire Department, volunteerism, and to Tocqueville. Go.
Well, I have been, if anybody's been following my reporting the past month or so, outside of the political part where I interviewed DeSantis and Nikki Haley and Vivek Ramaswamy,
right.
I have been spending most of my days in East Palestine, Ohio, where the train derailment happened, and right along the Pennsylvania-Ohio border. Sometimes people don't realize how close Pittsburgh is to Ohio. Not that far. And
hence
so,
the rivalry, right?
Not like Ohio and Michigan, I will tell you that. I think it's only between you, Hewitt, and myself over something like Steelers and the Browns. I'm not quite sure what his deal is.
Right.
But anyways, and in covering this tragedy, and I hope that people continue to pay attention to this, because I think there's going to be even more unfolding in the coming weeks that is unfortunately going to continue our distrust in larger corporations and institutions and in government. However, in covering this, you know, I'm reminded as to how much we rely on volunteer firemen and women to keep our communities, our homes, our buildings, our neighborhoods safe.
Absolutely.
90%, over 90% of firefighters in this country are volunteers. And as we all have sort of understood in the past two decades, volunteerism is falling in a drastic way. In Pennsylvania alone, in the late 1970s, there were 338,000 volunteer firemen in the state. Today, there are less than 38,000. And those communities have not changed in terms of a still needing that call to duty, that call to service that keeps these communities safe, keeps all of our communities safe.
What do you attribute that to, if you can do any kind of a grand takeaway? Because I'll give you just one little anecdote from my world. In one of my little sidebar things, I umpire Little League games, have for on and off 35, 40 years. And every year, it seems like that number gets wider. It used to be 80% of the work got done by 20% of the people that were willing to volunteer to help make that league go. It's now like 90-10, and the spread's getting worse. Fewer and fewer people seem to be volunteering for anything these days. What's going on, Selena?
Well, that is very true. A lot of things, a lot of those important things that make that sort of build that fabric in our society are fraying in large part to not just one thing, but a number of things. We aren't as connected as we were to our community in the same way that our parents were, or even in the way that we were grown up or we were brought up. And, you know, a lot of people just are more interested in self rather than community. And I don't think it's because our parents didn't teach us that was important to do, or we didn't teach our children that was important to do. We're in a society that is so centered on self,
yep,
that we tend to neglect that self is never going to be healthy unless the community is healthy. We are a country of individuals, but what has always made us great is that we've always had this sort of robust need to be part of something built better than ourselves, which is why we were always, to DeCoco's point, always starting new groups and building new associations and volunteering for more things. It made our politics healthier. It made our lives healthier. It made our community stronger. And somewhere along the line, and to me, I would attribute that to the sort of me generation that came up in the 70s.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Selena, great piece over at the Post-Gazette. You can see it over at SelenaZito.com and follow everything she does there. You can see her tweets at Zito Selena. I would also attribute it to people falling away from going to church every week and losing that volunteer spirit. We'll talk about that more later and all sorts of other politics ahead on Hour 2 of The Hewitt Show. This is Dwayne filling in for Hugh all this week. Come right back. 855-359-HOPE. That's 855-359-4673. Or you can go to the banner at HughHewitt.com and click on the Give Food or Give Hope banner there at HughHewitt.com. Look, do what you can to help. I mean, I understand there's problems everywhere. There's problems here. There's problems all over the world. But this is one specific area where you can make a difference in a kid's life for a very reasonable amount of money, a very reasonable amount of money. Just $72 feeds two kids for a year. 855-359-HOPE. Welcome back, America. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt this week. We have joining us on the phone line is Josh Kroshauer, senior political correspondent over at Axios.com. And Josh, good morning. Good to have you here. I want to cover the 2024 conventional wisdom rematch. If you want to couch it as a conventional wisdom, the odds are that it's going to be a Trump versus Biden rematch in 2024, a rematch that almost certainly nobody in the country really truly wants, right? So I want to cover this by covering both parties. You had a piece on the Republican side that you did with Mike Allen from late last week, the five angles of attack that Donald Trump are going to use against Ron DeSantis in the coming weeks and months. Can you outline quickly what those five are And then more importantly, which one of those five, if any, do you think will actually stick?
Yeah, so first off, Dwayne, it's good to talk to you on air after talking to you
absolutely
for so many years. Look, this is a divide for the soul of the Republican Party, and I think you watched Donald Trump's keynote address at CPAC over the weekend. He's leaning into those contrasts even more aggressively and trying to attack Paul Ryan, attack Karl Rove, attack the Bush family. We saw that in 2016, of course, but now the Trump campaign bet is that the Republican Party is now fully a MAGA populist vehicle, and he can fully change the party by renomination. And he views his best lines of attack against Ron DeSantis are going to be over foreign policy, and he's going to try to attack him as wishy-washy on Ukraine while he wants to get end the war and defund essentially the military aid to Ukraine. He's going to go after DeSantis on entitlement reforms that DeSantis has supported and voted on in the past. And he's also going to, try to portray DeSantis as part of sort of the old Republican Party, the establishment Republican Party. And that's sort of a go-to trick of Trump going all the way back to 2016. But he's getting more aggressive. And you saw the rhetoric, Dwayne, at CPAC. I mean, this is a real battle. Not just for these issues, but for the soul of the Republican Party.
True, except did you see what Chris Christie said on This Week about Trump's performance at CPAC that I hadn't seen anywhere else? That the room, he only had half a room at CPAC. It was only half full.
Yeah, I was at CPAC. It was the lowest attended CPAC in D.C. that I've ever been to, and I've been to most of the ones
but
in Washington.
And I don't even want to get into the reasons why. I'm just talking about Trump itself. For the Trump speech, Christie said on This Week on the panel that even for a Trump speech there, it wasn't a full house.
Yeah, so look, I think the bet, talking to both the Trump and DeSantis camps, pretty extensively over the last few weeks. The bet from the Trump campaign is that they want to solidify the 30% or so of the party that is more Trump than the party. It's not a majority, but 30% is not a bad base to start with. And that's why,
right,
Dwayne, you see the polls, right,
sure,
that are out in the last couple of weeks showing Trump expanding his lead, getting about 40-45%, doing quite well in recent weeks. But there is a 70% of the party that doesn't hear what Trump is saying, and it doesn't speak to them. The question is, there are going to be other candidates other than DeSantis. The question is, who can capture the message, who can argue that they're the person who's best able to take the party forward while also criticizing the Trump message, while also going after Trump in ways that they've been uncomfortable doing so far, whether it's DeSantis or Nikki Haley or Mike Pompeo. I mean, I've been struck. I'm getting a little bit of deja vu from 2016, where you have a front runner clearly in the polls, and none of the leading contenders are eager to say his name or draw a contrast with the former president. So if they're not going to do that, then Trump automatically.
Yeah, you see,
he has that base. He has that base.
Pompeo did some separation. He's and told Shannon Bream over on Fox News Sunday that Trump wasn't a real conservative because anybody that adds that much money to the debt is not conservative. So you're gonna see a lot more of that this time, I think, than last time. But before we completely run out of time, I want to shift to the other side of the coin. The Democratic Party is not as healthy as the bubble media would have you believe, because the New York Times piece says that there is an SOS. They basically did a draft J.B. Pritzker movement. Now, I'm going to ask you this quickly before we completely run out of time, which is I need to know how part of the Beltway you are if you take a J.B. Pritzker candidacy seriously.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, Dwayne. I think the biggest threat to first of all, number one, Biden. I've never seen a sitting president have over half of his party's voters not wanting him to run for re-election. That's a big warning sign.
We have now, haven't we?
Now we have it. Volatility. I wouldn't be surprised. Look at New Hampshire. Look at New Hampshire closely. They may not have any delegates this year because the Biden and the DNC want to punish New Hampshire for being first. But there could be like a Stacey Abrams or someone who's not an elected official to try to give Biden. You have Marianne Williamson already, but I think it could be some interesting movies and going on.
Robert Kennedy. We're going to have the Robert Kennedy bubble.
Biden-Kennedy 2024. That is the matchup in the Democratic. But no, I think there could be some interesting things.
Josh Proshauer, tremendous. Axios is where you get all of Josh's stuff, or read him on Twitter, at Josh Proshauer. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh, back for Hour 3 in just a little bit.
Look, you did the tough thing during COVID. You paid your people and pulled your business through the pandemic, or really the lockdown. And now, doing the tough thing could qualify you for up to $26,000 per employee at COVIDtaxrelief.org. Government funds are available to reward companies with two or more employees who stayed open during COVID. This is not a loan, and you don't have to pay it back. The program is complicated, but nobody knows more about it than the CPAs and tax experts at COVIDtaxrelief.org. You pay nothing up front. They do all the work and share a percentage of the cash they get you. Businesses of all types, including nonprofits and churches, can qualify, including those who took PPP loans, even if you had increases in sales. You did the tough thing for your employees during COVID. Let COVIDtaxrelief.org help you get up to $26,000 per employee. Visit COVIDtaxrelief.org. That's COVIDtaxrelief.org.
Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company.
Welcome back, everybody. 33 minutes past the hour. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt all this week. And many of you know that I write a column twice a week over at Hot Air's VIP section, including a piece that's going to go up today called The Rematch Nobody Really Wants. And that will go up once the boss, my boss, Ed Morrissey, who didn't hear the bumper music, by the way, by design. Ed, the bumper music was, of course, 16 Tons by Tennessee Ernie Ford, in honor of you being in honor of you being the boss. Welcome. Good to have you here on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Okay, it's great to be here, and I just want to state for the record, I'm not your boss!
Yes, I know, that's kind of a running gag we have, but it's fun, nonetheless. Anyway, Ed, I've been talking all morning about politics, both on the GOP front and the Democratic front, because both sides have their array of difficulties when it comes to what I ended up writing a column about today. I mean, on the Republican side, you've got, you know, the field taking all sorts of weird twists and turns and shapes and directions. I know you've got a piece on Larry Hogan deciding not to run. But on the Democratic side, you've got the coming specter of a Robert F. Kennedy, and Marianne Williamson got in, and the New York Times is asking for, you know, the SOS candidate of J.B. Pritzker. I mean, there's all sorts of craziness on both. I know. There's craziness on both sides. Before we get there, there's a couple pieces of video completely out of, you know, left field that I want to play for you and get you to bounce off of.
Okay.
Sergey Lavrov is the foreign minister of Russia. He is their equivalent of Secretary of State. He was giving a speech over in India over the weekend. Now, India is a complicated ally of ours. They're a complicated player in this because, as a whole, India's kind of siding with Russia a little bit on this whole thing, right, with Ukraine?
Well, India's getting a lot of cheap oil from Russia, and they like getting the cheap oil from Russia.
Yes, they do. So
they are not participating in the sanctions because it benefits them not to do so. Totally understand that, though.
Right, totally understand that. But they're not as moralistic when it comes to this. They're more transactional on this relationship, right?
So they are flexible. They are flexible in their scruples. I'll just put it that way. They're flexible in their scruples.
So Sergey Lavrov goes to an Indian audience and says this, Jacob, cut 18.
You know, the war which we are trying to stop and which was launched against us using the Ukrainian people, of course, it influenced the policy of Russia, including energy policy.
Now, you see, Ed Morrissey, I find that fascinating that Sergey Lavrov has the audacity, the stones to be able to tell an audience, you know, we're trying to stop this war that was launched against us. And the entire audience just laughs at him.
Yes, I think that this response says, we'll buy your oil, but we're not buying your BS.
Yes.
So, yeah. So quit while you're ahead, pal.
Yeah, I think that's true. Other news that happened over the weekend, over the last few days. I think we may have talked about it on our weekend review program a little bit briefly. That's a podcast that is a joint venture between Hot Air for their VIP section and the Hooniverse for right. our subscribers as well. It's just kind of Ed and I doing our thing like we're doing now, except at the end of the week. And we put that up on our respective sites. We talked a little bit about the House Subcommittee on Health and Oversight, where Dr. Marty Makary gave pretty remarkable testimony about how conclusive it was that the virus, the COVID virus, leaked out of a lab, which we all instinctively knew, right? But then he also came through with more detailed information about how Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Francis Collins had been told by senior doctors on their team that it had leaked from this lab, and they wanted to quash that and keep them from talking. So to keep those two docs from talking, all of a sudden an NIH grant for $9 million went those doctors' way, and they quit talking, Ed Morrissey. You know, that kind of stuff going on. Well, that led to right. Jim Jordan over the weekend talking to Fox's Maria Bartiromo, and he's going to go after Fauci now. Cut number 15.
First, on the COVID issue, understand that on January 31st, 10:32 p.m., 2020, so right at the get-go, Dr. Fauci gets an email from Dr. Christian Anderson, which says virus looks engineered, virus not consistent with evolutionary theory. The next day, he gets another email from Dr. Gary. Now, these are doctors he's handed out our tax dollars to over the years. Dr. Gary's email says, I don't know how this happens in nature. It would be easy to do in a lab. That same day, February 1st, 2020. So again, right at the start, that same day, Dr. Fauci organizes a conference call. Him and Dr. Collins get on there with Dr. Gary, Dr. Anderson, all these other virologists. They get on there, and 3 days later, everybody changes their story. The same guy who said this would be easy to do in a lab says, oh, now you're crazy if you think it came from a lab. The same guy that says, I don't know how this looks engineered, he changes his story. And then the kicker is, 3 months later, those same two doctors, Dr. Anderson and Dr. Gary, get a several million dollar grant from Dr. Fauci to continue their research. So the fundamental question is, why was Dr. Fauci so consumed with making sure the narrative wasn't about the lab? I think it's because they were doing gain-of-function research there. He didn't want that out. And that was the narrative that everyone on the left bought into, even though the facts and common sense, maybe most importantly, pointed to the lab leak theory.
I mean, this is something that we should all agree on.
Yeah.
Let's get to the bottom of this disease, this you know, virus that killed 7 million people across the world. I don't understand the media immediately going with this Democrat narrative and the CCP narrative rather than forcing for an investigation.
Yeah, why not just give us the facts, be transparent with us, but understand with this virus, they have told us all kinds of things that turned out to be false. I mean, they told us it didn't come from a lab. Now, again, it looks like it sure did, because the Department of Energy, FBI, everyone says it came from a lab. Now, they said it wasn't gain-of-function research. Sure looks like it was. They said it wasn't our tax dollars used at that Wuhan Institute of Virology. Yes, they were, through EcoHealth. They went there. And then, of course, they told us that the vaccinated couldn't get it. The vaccinated couldn't transmit it. They told us that there was no such thing as natural immunity. This would be the first virus in history where there's no such thing as right. natural immunity. So time and time again, they told us things that were not accurate. The fundamental question is why? What was the was it politics motivating them or what? But I always tell people, I always say, we're Americans. We're big boys and girls. We can handle it.
Right.
It's supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, for the people. So tell we the people the truth. Mm. Quit trying to quit lying to us.
Ed Morrissey, we instinctively knew all along that the virus had to leak from the lab. I mean, we just knew, regardless of the story we were being told. We are pretty much relatively sure that Anthony Fauci and Francis Collins were lying to us all the way along about this whole thing.
Right.
And I'm way yes. too cynical to think that a hearing is going to give me the justice that I think I won in this. But what will a Jim Jordan hearing give the American people?
Well, I think it's going to put people on the record saying, yeah, there was a cover-up. And the cover-up began right away. I mean, Jim Jordan's talking about this. The New York Post I believe it was late yesterday, reported that Anthony Fauci ordered a SNAP study to conclude that that this was a naturally evolving version of a virus, so that they could go out. And this is in February 2020,
right?
This is right off the bat, right after he got those emails from those two scientists, commissioned a study, and then sometime in March, I forget what it was, the Post has the sequencing on this, basically holds a press conference in early April saying, oh, we have a study that shows that this was natural evolution of this virus, and we can make the study authors available to you. I didn't have anything to do with this study. It's an independent study. It's nonsense. He actually emails that Jim Jordan's committee is now making public shows that Fauci commissioned the study specifically to come to the conclusion that it wasn't an engineered virus. This has been a cover-up. And the reason for the cover-up, Duane, is that in December 2017, Francis Collins, who is head of the NIH, countermanded a ban on U.S. funding for gain-of-function research that had been in place since 2014 after the Cambridge Working Group basically predicted exactly what happened in this pandemic, is that it would lab leaks are not uncommon. They get lab, you know, the pathogens escape. And if you're doing gain of function research on viruses like this, the likelihood is that they would be wildly transmissible and create global pandemics. Less than 2 years after Francis Collins ended that moratorium on funding for gain-of-function research, we had a global pandemic killed millions of people. And so you had Collins who lifted the gain-of-function research. You had Fauci who was using grant money to fund it. These two guys were still in charge when this happened, and they were trying to keep from being accountable for this pandemic. Now, I don't think that they maliciously started a pandemic, but they're incompetent. And what happened was that they covered up their incompetence, and the media went along with it, and the government went along with it, both in the Trump and in the Biden administration.
Totally agreed. Is there going to be any penalty paid by them of any kind at all?
Other than, you know, they're both in their 70s. I mean, I think Fauci's 80.
Turned 80. Other than
I don't think so. Other than reputation, other than history, no, I don't think.
And I'm not even sure that's going to be the case with half the country. The left still thinks that Fauci walks on water.
Right. Yes. They're still doing documentaries, you know, hailing Fauci. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw that one that was produced last year, but yeah, just. Terrible propaganda.
Terrible propaganda. Speaking of terrible propaganda, 30 seconds. The Larry Hogan is not going to run, but on the Democratic side, the New York Times came out with a piece saying that our SOS candidate, our emergency fallback is not Kamala Harris, is not Pete Buttigieg. If Joe Biden can't do it, J.B. Pritzker is the guy. What say you, Ed Morrissey?
He's really popular in Illinois. You know, he's what was that old line from To Be or Not to Be from Mel Brooks? He's world famous in Poland. Pritzker.
Yes, that's exactly right. Go ahead.
Pritzker's a no-go. There's no way that happens.
I don't think so either. Ed, as always, great to talk to you. I will talk to you at the end of the week for the Week in Review. Read everything that Ed writes over at hotair.com. Read my column whenever the boss decides to grant permission for it to be posted at the Hot Air VIP section. Thank you very much, Ed Morrissey, managing editor of Hot Air. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.